Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state, and she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. Continuing where we left off in the last show, we are looking at the wants category. What we were doing was figuring out how much you can spend on wants. And this actually is simple. You enter your monthly must-have expenses, which we've been working on for weeks now, taking into account all of the cuts that you were able to make. Then we took out the 20% of your take-home pay, which is earmarked for savings. The remainder of that is your wants budget. So effectively, it's you have that revised monthly must-have expenses, then your monthly savings goal, which is monthly after-tax income times 20%, and that equals your savings goal. So you have your monthly after-tax income minus your must-have expenses, then minus your savings goal, and that equals your monthly wants budget. And that's where you get all the money for the stuff that you want, but don't really need. But that's irrelevant here. It's the pleasure, the fun, the excitement, and the relaxation of what you want and living life, not for something way in the future, but currently. If your money is in balance across the board, you should have about 30% of your take-home pay left over for your wants budget. Of course, the pieces of balanced budget are interconnected, so if one goes up, another must come down. If you are heavy on must-haves, your wants budget will be skimpier, and if your must-haves are lean, it's perfectly fine to spend more on the wants, so long as you leave 20% for savings. The calculation is always the same. There should be enough to cover your must-haves, 50%, enough to cover your savings, which is 20%, and plenty left over for fun. Elizabeth and Amelia give a story about setting limits. It's called Shane's Story. Shane was one of the poorest kids in a high school full of poor kids. He's proud to have made it out of the old neighborhood into a respectable job and a nice apartment. A devoted Notre Dame alum, he hopes to settle down someday, but for now, he is enjoying the single life, except for a nagging problem. He worries about his credit card balance, which creeps a little higher every month. When he called Elizabeth and Amelia to help him calculate his money balance, he found that his must-haves were under control, but he was having trouble with his fun spending. He lived his own variation on the song, "I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No." Shane always dressed nicely, nervous that his coworkers might think he was a low class. He always paid the entire bill when he asked a woman on a date. And when his buddies invited him to go to a nightclub or to see the Pistons, he always said yes and always paid more than his share of the tab. None of the outings were wildly expensive, $40 here, $75 there, but his paycheck wouldn't allow more than a couple a month, and he was saying yes a couple of times a week. They worked out his numbers. Shane immediately knew he had to scale back, but it unnerved him. What will they think if I say no? So they asked him to practice something they've heard rich people say 1,000 times. I can't afford that. In fact, they played drama coaches. Say it with anger. Put some real heart into it, loud and furious. Now say it with resentments. Fill your voice with bitterness and envy. And they kept it up. Say it with pain. Say it with disappointment. Say it with self-pity. They eventually worked out the best one. Say it with good cheer. Laugh out loud about it. Shane said it, and they said it back. They listed all the things in the wants category that they couldn't possibly afford. They named $250 a day spas and $1,000 bottles of champagne, and they all laughed about them. They named a $19 bar of fancy soap and $42 for underwear. And then they asked Shane to pick out one item every day and then say it out loud. I can't afford that, with a little twinkle in his eye. And, of course, good cheer in his voice. Over time, it got a lot easier. They received an email from Shane after some while. He said that one of his guys at work has suggested a Saturday night paintball outing, and Shane replied with a laugh, "Sounds like a lot of fun, but I just can't afford it." One of the other guys spoke up and said, "You know, I can't either." Then the other guy said, "What if we watch the game at my place? We can get some pizza." The whole day cost less than $10, and he had a good time. But the best moment was when Shane had said no, and no one fainted, walked off, or even raised an eyebrow. Apparently, Shane wasn't the only one who thought fun was a little more fun when there were some limits. So that's the next issue. How well do you set limits? This is a true and false series of questions. So get out a piece of paper and a pen and answer these, true or false. I can't resist buying certain things, true or false. I charge things on several different credit cards, true or false. It's hard to keep track of how much is in the bank, true or false. When I go out, I usually end up spending more than I planned, true or false. When my credit card bill arrives, I am always shocked by how big it is, true or false. I can never make it through the holidays without spending a lot of money, true or false. Sometimes I buy things, but when I get them home, I think I can't really afford this, true or false. I don't really want to add up how much I spend. I think I'd rather not know, true or false. And last, I usually buy what I want, even if I'm not sure I can afford it, true or false. Now, this is an audit. It is designed to give you a quick snapshot of whether you struggle with setting limits over your fun spending. If you responded to two or more statements with true, you would benefit from putting some tighter control on your fun spending. If you marked true for four or more statements, this should serve as a loud, loud wake-up call that you are spending on a binge that is undermining your financial health and, in all likelihood, your happiness. So we'll continue with some effective changes that will help you regain control and rebuild your confidence. But first, we'll have a station identification break. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So we were looking at setting limits to fun. That was point one. Now we're going to talk about shifting to cash, which is the key to confidence. Let's take an example. Dry cleaning, $28. 3 frames of bowling and 2 Cokes, $32. 1 hardcover and 2 paperback books, $48. Stereo repair, $124. Dinner and a movie, $59. Orange sweater and matching pants, $83 on sale. Replacement shutters, $280. Sunglasses, $42. New bedside lamp, $52. Window unit air conditioning, $340. Haircut, $35. Heavy duty soup pot, $66. Well, how much did you just spend? If you laid down the plastic for all of these, you might not realize that you spent well over $1,000. And that is the point. By using credit cards, it becomes almost impossible for anyone to keep track of total spending, unless you pull out a notebook and calculator every time you lay down a credit card. You will always be a little vague on how much you have spent. Not good. Money is money, but it does matter how you pay. Credit cards, checks, debit cards, cash. The method of payment makes a difference. Credit cards make overspending very, very easy. They are an open invitation to trouble. Even a card with a low limit won't keep you safe. Nowadays, credit card companies routinely let you charge more than your limit allows, just so they can hit you with an over-the-limit fee at the end of the month. They truly are an open invitation to trouble. They also make keeping track of what you're spending very, very complicated. Even if you don't regularly overspend, those cards make your financial life more complex and a lot more stressful. Credit card spending is invisible, so you have to keep a running tally on your own or just wait and pray. Credit cards always leave you guessing whether you have enough or whether you are already in the hole. If you don't keep track, you risk going over what you can really afford. And if you do try to keep a running total in your head, then you are spending too much time thinking about money and not enough time having fun. Credit cards are also ridiculously, unbelievably expensive. Anyone who is working hard to get her money in balance has no business wasting money on these cards. Annual fees, late fees, exorbitant interest charges, just to spend your own money. That, friend, is not smart. If you are someone who clips coupons and refuses to spend more than a dollar for a cup of coffee, then you don't want to throw money down the credit card pit. At this point, you may be smiling smugly, saying to yourself, "Yes, but my credit card doesn't cost me anything. I don't pay an annual fee, and I don't carry a balance on my card." Good for you, but that doesn't mean you'll never pay extra money to your credit card company. And here's why. The credit card companies count on the fact that even people like you make mistakes. A few years ago, they figured out that they could boost profits by dinging people with more fees, late fees, minimum finance fees, sent it to the wrong address fees, return check fees, and any other fee they could think of. And boy, it did work. Now the law has changed somewhat in recent years on this, but still, with their legal departments, they do figure out ways to rack up more and more money, hundreds of billions of dollars, in fact, in fees, interest, and other charges. It comes out to over $1,000 per household just in this category. So give yourself an instant tax cut. Don't use credit cards. Look at it this way. The credit card company makes its profits when you mess up and then pay them for it. You wouldn't agree to carry a bomb into your living room even if you were pretty sure that it wasn't likely to go off. Using credit cards to pay for the fun purchases is just as dangerous. But then there's that other category. It's very attractive and seductive. The freebies. Frequent flyer miles. 10% off all your purchases today. A contribution to your favorite charity. A cool t-shirt or a cell phone. Come on, you're too smart to fall for these. You wouldn't buy a $500 set of Jinsu knives just because they offered you the free apple peeler, right? Well, credit card freebies are the same kind of con. There are thousands of sharp business types who have full-time jobs aimed at figuring out exactly what gift or gimmick or lure will get their card into your pocket. You get those freebies only if the credit card company can make a profit from getting you to sign up. And so far, they have it exactly right. Credit card profits, freebies and all, keep rising every single year. So buy your own plane ticket, make your own contributions to the Golden Retriever Rescue Fund, and live without the t-shirt. But don't send your hard-earned money to MasterCard and Visa. Besides, economists have demonstrated that when people buy with credit cards, they spend more than if they buy with cash. That comes from marketing letters called Always Leave Home Without It, a further investigation of the credit card effect on willingness to pay. So that's right, the same people buying the same kind of stuff, but give them credit cards and they blow more money. So use that piece of information to your advantage. Then the next thing is the debit card. That's the other piece of plastic in your wallet, which markets itself as being just like cash. But is it really? A debit card can have many of the same disadvantages as a credit card. It's just as tough to keep track of how much you're spending since there is no automatic reminder every time you open your wallet. Nowadays, though, you can go online and check regularly to see how much of your own money you have consumed. And most debit card situations should be set up so there is no ability to use more than you have in there. But a growing number of banks are charging extra fees every time you lay down that debit card, so it isn't free. But there are some banks out there who do not yet do this. But the real whammy is a lot of so-called debit cards are attached to a line of credit. This puts you right back in the credit card territory, giving your hard-earned money to a bank and risking high fees and high interest. So if you have any doubts about keeping your debit card spending under control, then probably you should treat it like one more credit card, leave home without it, unless you have the kind of card where these things do not happen. If you are struggling to keep control of your fun money, then just shift to cash. Put the money straight into your wallet. When the cash is there, have a ball. And when it's gone, quit spending. If you want to know how much you have, just open your wallet and count. No calculator, no complicated record keeping, and no chance to get in a lot of trouble. Simple, neat, and old-fashioned. Cash has worked since Methuselah was a little boy, and it can work today for you. You'll have an automatic budget reminder every time you pull out your wallet because it's right there in front of you, how much you can spend on your wants. You can know with 100% certainty that you can afford your fun, and you also know ahead of time when it's time to stop. No guesswork, no fudging, and no more running into trouble. And no more paying someone else for your money. No more late payments because your credit card bill got lost in a pile of newspapers. No more interest payments. No more black marks on your credit report. No embarrassing moments when you get turned down for a purchase. Best of all, cash is accepted everywhere. And I'll come back after station identification with this point. This is Iowa Bankruptcy Attorney Robert Liptak, and you're listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So let's review the advantages of cash. Easy to tell how much you can spend. No need to keep complicated spending records. No surprises at the end of the month. No damaged credit reports. No billing mistakes or overcharges. No late fees or over-the-limit charges. No interest charges. No risk of going into debt. Some merchants will give a discount, and it's accepted everywhere. Of course, you might hate carrying cash, you fear you could lose it, you might be mugged, and you don't want to flash a wad of money wherever you're trying to pay for a loaf of bread. That's true. But as we move on, we'll explain how your credit card company is about 100 times more likely to rip you off than any mugger in a dark alley. But for now, just stop to consider, is carrying cash really that big a deal? Suppose you earn about $30,000 a year, which would mean your fund budget is about $400 a month. That means you get about $100 a week for wants. Is it really too much to carry $100 in your wallet? If you are still worried, then leave half a week's fund money in your sock drawer and put the other half in your wallet. Is it really a problem to walk around with $50 in your wallet? We don't think so. The point here is to keep it simple. You may need to continue putting business expenses on your business card, or you may decide to continue using a gas card and paying a bill out of your must-have checking account. But for everyday run-of-the-mill fun stuff, nothing beats cold hard cash. No surprises, no extra fees, and no complicated budgeting. It's the cheapest, easiest, most efficient way to make sure that your wants spending stays in balance every single month. You may ask the question, what if I run out? That's the question most often asked from folks who are switching to cash. Once you get the swing of things, it will happen a lot less often than you might guess. After all, your grandparents managed on cash for decades without any problem. Even so, you may want to keep an extra $50 or so shoved in the back of your sock drawer just in case. This isn't for big emergencies like an engine overhaul or a trip to the hospital. We'll look at that later on. This is for life's really small emergencies and for the fun purchases that can be hard to postpone until the next payday. This is for things like a battery for your watch, granddad's birthday present, a trip to the vet, class pictures for the kids, the in-laws coming to town as a surprise. That extra $50 or so is there whenever you need it or really, really want it. Just remember to replace that $50 on your next payday. So you may also opt for a little internal budgeting, tucking away some of the wants cash so you can save up for a little treat. You may want to put a little aside each week toward your Christmas fund or for a trip to the Grand Canyon or for the new sofa you've been eyeing. You can stick the cash in your underwear drawer, your bank account, or your piggy bank, whatever works for you. When you have enough for the plasma TV, go get a cashier's check and celebrate all the way to the appliance store. This is your money to put wherever you want, but if you prefer to just go with the flow and keep it all tucked in your wallet, that's fine too. So long as you keep your wants spending in balance, you can section it off or lump it together to your heart's content. Now I like to look at eating regularly. Food more than anything else you buy straddles both the wants and the must-haves. You need it to live and you need to be healthy. And yet you probably blow a lot of extra money on food that's a convenient or fun or tasty or whatever for your basic food needs. And that's perfectly fine. This is why you included a modest amount for your basic food needs as part of your must-haves. Of course, life isn't that simple. When you go to the grocery store, you aren't going to fill up two separate shopping carts, one with the wants and the other with the sustenance basics. In reality, you jumble it all into one cart and pay for it all at once. So the easiest solution is to take your food money out of your must-have bank account and stick it in your wallet along with the fun money. Then just pay the grocery tab in cash the same way you handle your other fun purchases. And of course, make sure you're eating well, and there is an emphasis on the basic food needs. Now also, some of your wants get paid with a check instead of cash. The cable bill, your gym membership, your cell phone, and the kids' piano lessons are all wants. You pay for these items month after month, but you just don't pay in cash, so they need to be accounted for a little differently. To calculate how much cash to carry in your wallet for fun, you'll need to make a few simple adjustments to account for your grocery money and your wants you buy with a check. So do it this way. What's your monthly wants budget plus your basic food budget? Then you minus wants you pay every month with a check, for example, cable TV, cell phone, gym membership, long distance bill lessons, and that equals the monthly cash to carry for fun. So again, it's the budget of monthly wants plus the basic food budget minus wants you pay every month with a check. And that will equal the monthly cash to carry for fun. If you're writing so many fun checks that you're left with too little cash to enjoy yourself, this may be a clue about realigning your priorities for your fun money. You may decide that premium channels or a cell phone that comes with a tiny television and soon a popcorn popper are not quite as much fun as having cash in your pocket. Your choice, so long as your total wants spending stays in balance. And I'd like to just give a story. Kevin is a tall and soft-spoken person with a habit of stooping as if he is trying not to stand out. Everyone calls him a nice guy, although most people would be surprised to learn just how messy his divorce was. His ex-wife placed the whole blame on him. He didn't appreciate her enough. He didn't know how to have fun. He was cold and dull. The fact that she installed a new boyfriend just 6 weeks later didn't take any of the sting out of her words. Kevin's sons like the new guy, and their cheerful chatter about how cool the new guy is and how he knows car stuff weighs heavily on Kevin. Kevin takes the boys every weekend, and he works hard to make each outing fun. They head for the Sharper Image and computer stores. Movies every weekend, complete with tubs of popcorn and giant sodas, hours at the go-kart track, trips to Six Flags every month or two. The boys ask Kevin for everything they want, new bicycle helmets, backpacks, a basketball hoop, and Dad always says, sure. 10 months after the divorce, Kevin finally mustered up the courage to ask a pretty coworker out for a movie. As they stepped up to the box office to buy tickets, he had to go through 3 credit cards before he could find one that wasn't over the limit. Mortified, he didn't say a word to his date through the entire movie. He took her home immediately afterward, and he didn't call back. When he went to see Elizabeth Warren and Amelia Tiagi, Kevin's hands shook as he kept smoothing out the credit card bills he had laid on the table. They went through the math on his must-haves, which were okay, savings, none, and wants, way over the limit. Kevin immediately started talking about how he doesn't see his boys much and how he wants them to have good memories, and with that, they cut him off. Of course he loves his boys, but that's just not the point. So they helped Kevin work out his wants budget. It totaled up to about $140 a week, so he earmarked $120 for the weekends with the kids. They thought he ought to keep more back for clothes and dates, but this was Kevin's decision, not theirs. The following weekend, when he picked up the boys, Kevin showed them a stack of 12 $10 bills. The boys were impressed. It looked like a lot of money. And we will continue in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life.